All right, let's all be seated and let's just continue with what we're trying to do. It's a really good visitors. What we're doing on Sunday night is just surveying the Bible. We wrote some questions, a program that we studied. Took us several years to study, but that was been a few years ago. And if you're visiting with us tonight and you do not have a copy of these, you would not have a copy of these, just hold up your hand. And so make sure you give them to visitors before you give to our members who've forgotten and left theirs at home. But and just whenever you finish with that, just leave it laying on the pew. If you need a copy of the questions, questions are on three levels: prophet, priest, and king. Prophet questions are the easiest, priest kings, and then a prophet priest, and then prophet priest and king, and then the king being the hardest of those. So those are the three levels, and we're still looking through the Bible, and we start 2 Samuel tonight. Where's Samuel? Where does 2 Samuel fit in? What is that other name of 2 Samuel? You remember we talked about the fact that the Jews had 1 and 2 Kings. Guess what they had? They had two other books about kings. I mean, these names of the books were given by men. And so they name 1 Samuel, 1 Kings. In fact, in some older Bibles, and maybe even some more modern Bibles, it looks at the title of the book, 1 Samuel, otherwise, or sometimes called the first book of the kings. 2 Samuel is called the second book of the kings. And then what we call 1 Kings, because we think about those books of Samuel as 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, what we call 1 Kings, they call 3 Kings. And what we call 2 Kings, they call 4 Kings. That confuse you enough? Now, that's important. The first book of the Kings, Jewish terminology, tells about the first king. Who was that? King Saul. The second book of the Kings, Jewish terminology, tells about the second king. Who's the second king? David. And the third book of the Kings tells about the third king. And who's that? Solomon. Now then, let's see how well you know this. How long did Saul reign? 40. Oh, you're doing good. How long did David reign? Oh, 40 years. How long did Solomon reign? All right, let's do that one more time. How long did Saul reign? 40 years. How long did David reign? 40 years. How long did Solomon reign? How long did it rain in Noah's day? Did I catch you? 40 days. All right, let's stay awake. Let's stay awake. Now then, where does this fit in the big picture? All of a sudden, you open up your Bible and here you are in 2 Samuel. What on earth is this book all about? The first book starts in Genesis, and the book of Genesis covers how many years? How many years are those 50 chapters? Roughly, about how many years? If I say about, any number you give is right. About how many years are covered in the book of Genesis? About 2,500 years. And so you read about it. You read about the creation. You read about Adam. You read about Noah. You read about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You read about Joseph. 2,500 years of Bible history in one book of the Bible. The next four books cover about 80 years of the life of Moses. Really, they cover about 120 years. The second book is Exodus. Covers Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's the life of Moses. You've got four books that cover the life of Moses. First one covers 2,500 years, and the second book covers, really covers the last 40 years of Moses' life. Moses is the one who takes them toward that promised land. Who takes them into the promised land? Joshua. And so Joshua's there in the promised land. And then once they get in the promised land, they've got to have some kind of government. And that's the book after Joshua. What's the name of that book? Judges. About how long did the judges last? About how long? About 300 years. Perhaps a little bit closer to 400 years. But it's one of those about answers. You cannot miss that. And so you got the judges. And so you've covered a lot of Bible history. When you read Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Book of Joshua, Book of Judges for about 400 years, 1 Samuel, well about 40 years, and 2 Samuel about 40 years. And so what you have here, you've got all of this as it is developing in relationship to all of these things. King Saul is dead. Last thing that happens in 1 Samuel is the death of King Saul. Tragic, commits suicide. Does not want to be slain by the Philistines, by the enemy, and so he takes his own life. There are some interesting things in those first 6 chapters. They're not on the card, but let me tell you what David did. David honored King Saul. In 1 Samuel, remember what he did when Saul came into that cave? David spared his life. And when the second time David was able to go up and to cut the piece of the garment off of Saul's, I believe that was the second time he did that, he could have killed King Saul. He didn't do it. In fact, when you open up 2 Samuel, there's a man who came to David and said, "I got some great news for you. I've got some great news. Saul is dead. How did he die? I killed him." You know, he thought, man, this king is going to really, really reward me because I've killed King Saul, who's been trying to kill young David. You know what David did? Kill that man. You know how you treat your enemies? If you want to understand why this man is called a man after God's own heart, you need to read these first 6 chapters of 2 Samuel. David has opportunity after opportunity to retaliate, but he doesn't do it. Absolutely does not do it. Whenever some enemies of David brought the head of another son of King Saul and brought it to David, thinking they'd be rewarded, do you know what David did? Kill those men. You cannot strike the Lord's anointed. And in this day and age, we need to hear what the Lord talks about us, tells us to honor the king. There's a whole lot of talking that's going on that violates that. I don't care which party you're in or, you know, one way or the other. You need to understand, civil government is anointed by the Lord. It is God's minister to protect us. And David's an illustration of it. But he gets down to the personal level. You're going to read a little bit later in this book about a crippled son that Jonathan had, Saul's grandson. And David says, "What can I do to honor King Saul? Saul is trying to kill him." And if you want to read 6 chapters, that will change your attitude toward those that have treated you wrong, you need to read 2 Samuel, those first 5 or 6 chapters. There's no reason on earth, no earthly reason, why David should have responded in relationship to that. There's Abner, who was trying to make sure that a descendant of Saul is on the throne. David tries to make peace with him when Joab comes and kills Abner. Joab's a man that's sort of on David's side. Abner was on Saul's side. There's a great discrepancy trying to get the next king in place. And Abner is taken by Joab and slain. You know what David does? David goes to Abner's funeral weeping. Would you weep at the funeral of your enemy? You know why is a man after God's own heart? Because we're not. And when you read those early chapters that are there, the questions on there, 2 Samuel tells about who? That's just a generic question, and that is, who's 2 Samuel tell us about? King David. Where would I read about David as a shepherd? Not King David. 1 Samuel is boy David. 2 Samuel is King David. The life of David and wherever Saul's throwing the javelin at him, trying to kill him and all of those things. You're going to read about that in 1 Samuel. In fact, sometimes had I been in charge of naming the book, I might have named them 1 David and 2 David instead of 1 Samuel and 2 David, because it's all about David. It's a transition between Saul, who's been appointed to be king, and he was everything anybody wanted a king to be. There is a question down there. It's on the king card. David's first occupation which prepared him to be a king. That amazing? What Saul look like? LeBron James? What does David look like? Spud Webb. I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the modern characters. You understand what I'm talking about? David did not look like a king. What's the difference in Saul and David? I have selected a man after my own heart to lead my people. Folks, if we don't get this, we're going to make some real, real mistakes in judgment. There are some interesting verses about this contrast between David and Saul, and I know I'm chasing a rabbit, but this is the kind of time that perhaps this ought to be mentioned. You see, another word for elders is shepherd. I want you to listen to this from, let's see which psalm this is. Pages are stuck together. I'm sure it's Psalm 78, and watch me turn the page, and it'll be 79. But listen to these words, a long psalm, when he says, he rejected the tent of Joseph, talking about God, and did not choose the tribe of Ephraim. He chose the tribe of Judah. He chose Mount Zion, which he loved, and he built his sanctuary like the heights, like the earth which he had established forever. He, Jehovah God, also chose David his servant and took him from the shepherds from following the ewes that had been brought to him to shepherd Israel, to shepherd Jacob his people, and Israel with his inheritance. You know what a shepherd does? Thou anointest my head with oil. You're going to waste oil, olive oil on a sheep? Thy rod and thy staff. That lion and that bear came to take those sheep that David was responsible for, and David laid down his life, or at least risked laying down his life. What's King Saul? I'm king. I love that statement when Agrippa comes before Paul in the book of Acts, and it said, they came in all of their pomp. God chose a shepherd to lead his people. And you and I need to understand that the leadership that we need to have in the church, we do not need somebody who says, I am the only one to be revered in this church. I am the reverend one. I am the most reverend one. Doesn't sound like Jesus when he says, don't you be called father, father. Don't you be called rabbi. Don't you be called teacher. You're all brothers. And I took a shepherd. King Saul, his armor. David, his sling, and he shepherded Israel. As we study 2 Samuel, I want you to think about David and how he shepherded. Was David perfect? Absolutely not. Are elders perfect? Absolutely not. But it's the kind of heart, the difference in a shepherd and a king. If you don't have sheep, what do you raise? It has four legs and you get milk from it. Cattle. What do cowboys do? They get on their horses and ride around on the outside. They get behind the cattle and use whips and all of those things. You know what a shepherd does? A shepherd lays down his life. He even slept with his sheep. And the name of one of the best books I've ever heard about eldership is They Smell Like Sheep. Elders need to smell like sheep. And that's what David did. David knew what it was like to be frail. And so here is this crippled grandson of Saul. And David said, I've got to take care of that one. Why? Because there have been times in my life in which I've not had all of these things. Listen to the rest of this. So he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. The Lord is my cowboy. Got a whip, going to drive me to heaven. The Lord is my shepherd. We hear the voice of that shepherd and we follow him. Think about the adversity that David had in his life. He had all those sons. You know, Solomon didn't just all of a sudden decide, I think I'll have a lot of wives. David made a mistake. How many wives did David have? Does anybody remember? June, I'm looking right at you because I think you know the Old Testament. Huh? Eight was the number that was in my mind. David, does that sound about right to you? David had eight wives. You know what's wrong? You know the penalty for having eight wives? Eight mother-in-laws. And Solomon's the wisest man that ever lived. How'd you like to have his in-law problem? You understand what I'm saying? Where'd he learn it? Learned it from his dad. David didn't live the best of lives. And look at the adversity that he had. David had one of his sons who fell in love with his sister, with the son's sister, and raped her. You got problems in your life with your kids and your family? How'd you like to be David? You know what happened to that? Another one of his sons killed the rapist. How'd you like to deal that with your kids? Had another son who led a rebellion against David, Absalom. You want to talk about adversity and how adversity is a blessing to us? You want to understand why David's a man after. You know, you want to understand why the psalmist is David, where he opens up his heart and says, look inside my heart, here's where I'm hurting. Another son led a rebellion. Well, David's still alive. He comes into the king's palace and takes David's wives, his stepmothers, half-mothers, I don't know where to get steps and halves in relationship to all of this, and rapes and lays with them out in the public square so everybody could see them. You got problems? Still a good man. That remarkable, all of those things that happen. And when David's ready to become king, and that's early in the book of 2 Samuel, is that when he's ready to become king, it takes him 7 years before he really becomes king over all of the Jews. There was a push to get Saul's sons, at least someone other than David, to be king. And it took him 7 years to gain the throne. And no sooner does he gain the throne than his problems start back. Let me encourage you to do something. Go back and read 1 Kings. And tell me how many days of ease and comfort King David had. The Lord is my shepherd. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me to calm waters. None of this rapids where it'd be difficult for a sheep to come and to drink water. And it is David who said, green pastures and still waters. God doesn't guarantee you you'll have an easy life if you become a Christian. Job said, shall we receive good at the hand of the Lord, not evil? What happens to one man happens to all men. The difference in David and Saul is how they reacted to a particular matter. Let me see if I can illustrate it, and we've only got about 6 minutes as I look down at my watch. There came that time when David was able to go and take the city of Jerusalem. Had belonged to the Jebusites. You read about Jerusalem way back over the book of Genesis, chapter 15, where you read about Salem. Maybe it's chapter 13. Read about the king of Salem. Melchizedek, king of Salem. Salem is Jerusalem. But that land later was owned by the Jebusites, and so it was called, part of the time, Jebusalem. But sometimes you try to smooth out words, and Jebusalem became Jerusalem. David went in and took part of the city. And there came that occasion where David was ready to move the Ark of the Covenant away from where it had been to bring it more to the, ultimately to Jerusalem, where it could be used there. It's a great time. They're ready to move the cart. You know this story, don't you? Elsa? You remember the story, don't you? How was that ark? What's in that covenant? What is in that ark of the covenant? Who's in the ark of Noah? Noah is. What's in the ark of the covenant? The covenant is 10 commandments. And here they are ready to move it. How was to be moved? Only certain priests were allowed to carry it, but it had rods that were there that they held it by those rods. And it's this occasion in the life of David, whenever the Ark of the Covenant is ready to be moved, and instead of moving it like God said, they put it on an ox cart. Not an old one, not a messed up one, a brand new ox cart. And also, who's in charge of driving that Ark of the Covenant from the place where the Ten Commandments had been kept, the oxen stumbles. And Uzzah, because he's responsible, took out his hand and touched the Ark of the Covenant. And you can use all your human wisdom, but you better understand something about the nature of God, even if you don't understand why he did it. God struck him dead. Let us learn to keep holy things holy. And God had said, when you move the Ark of the Covenant, only certain people are allowed, and they're not even allowed to touch it. They have got to move it with those rods. And whenever they tried to move it in some other way, that holy covenant, that holy Ark of the Covenant, has got to be treated by that which is sacred. What's holy? What about this book? See the name on it? Not on mine. It's faded. The Holy Book. We hold in our hands the words of God. And we must learn to pay respect to the holy things that are there. David learned a lesson. How does the Lord chasten you? Life's experience. And let me urge you to get inside this book and learn wisdom from God of how God wants us to live and to be, and to let His words chasten us. And if we don't, we'll make the very mistake that Uzzah made. And that is, I'm not going to treat that which is holy as holy. Was it this morning that we sang, holy, holy, holy? Where does that come from? Isaiah 6, Revelation chapter 4, chapter 5, around the throne in heaven, chapter 4, there are heavenly beings singing, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty. The name of the Lord is holy. His book is holy. His way of life is holy. Let us be wise enough to be as wise as a shepherd rather than some arrogant person that thinks we're royalty and we have a right to tell God what's right. That's it. Thank you very much for being here tonight.